This is Showbiz Sandbox for the week of April 26, 2009. I'm Karen Woodward, reporting from Los Angeles.
And I'm Jay Sperling Reich, also reporting from Los Angeles. This is our very first episode. We're a new podcast bringing you all the dirt on the news-making headlines around the entertainment world.
All right, so my most exciting story of the week was the William Morris and Endeavor merge that I don't think is officially announced yet.
I was just going to say, I don't know if that's actually a news story yet. I mean, it's a news story. The fact that it's not a news story yet is the news story.
Well, but they've had so many like talks, and Nikki Fink, the blogger, has been following it closely, and supposedly they're going to call it WME, as in like William Morris Endeavor Entertainment. WME Entertainment. Which,
well, I know that during the week, this past week, Nikki Fink and Variety and The Hollywood Reporter were all ruminating about the meetings that the board members of both agencies were having, both at William Morris and at Endeavor, to discuss the fine details. So they're already at the fine details stage of this merger, whatever that might mean.
Right. So, I mean, it's just, I think it's just a matter of time before they, like, it's actually announced that it's done. But what I find the most interesting about this is who's staying and who's going. Because there were so many, you know, quote unquote, young Turks over at Endeavor that were let go. There was like three of them that were let go about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I think most of them have found jobs elsewhere, like Paradigm or Gersh or APA or what have you. And although they were the first people that were kind of let go and people kind of felt sorry for them, they're the ones that are going to come out looking better because they were let go first and got jobs. And I'm curious to know about all the rest of the agents that, you know, kind of the lower level people or even the highest level people that are going to be let go. Where are they going to go? Because those mid-level agency jobs just aren't going to be out there. They're going to have to become managers.
But at the end of the day, when you merge these two companies, Endeavor and William Morris, they're still going to have the same number of clients. If they keep every single agent, they'll have the same number of clients for the most part. A few might run away to Creative Artists Agency or to ICM just because they feel they're not being looked after properly during this whole merger. But for the most part, there will be the same number of clients. So if you start shedding agents, which will happen, I agree with you, what are all those clients going to do? I guess they'll follow their agents to wherever they wind up, or there will be a bunch of people.
I think they will use this opportunity to get rid of just all of their clients that don't make them money.
Oh, so what you're saying is when they axe these agents after the merger, they're going to let the clients for those agents go as well.
Hell yeah.
So what you're saying is if you have really good clients, you're pretty safe.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think you're probably right about that.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the reason why these agents are being let go is because, you know, their clients are like developmental clients or they're, you know, has-beens, which just makes them perfect for the kind of the mid-level agencies out there. But the mid-level agencies are mid-level for a reason because they can't afford to be paying all these, you know, really high salaries. So there's only a certain number of slots available to hire agents. What are the rest of them going to do?
Who knows? They might go out and form their own agency.
I never thought about that. Maybe.
I mean, that's how Endeavor got started.
Yeah.
Tom Strickler, Ari Emanuel, and two others whose names are completely escaped me.
That's okay. Ari Emanuel is really the only one anyone really cares about.
Well, he's certainly the one that people associate with Endeavor.
That's true.
I remember reading that the day after it occurred.
Totally remember that.
I'm thinking, wow, this is really Hollywood. These agents are switching sides and starting their own companies and running around with client files and stealing clients. And then less than a year later, maybe just about a year later, working at CAA and was, you know, being worked overworked, as we often are in those jobs. And late one Sunday night, Kevin Volchek, who at the time was Adam Bennett's assistant and is now an agent at Endeavor, or I believe he's still there, he was frantically typing something on his computer late one Sunday night, and he was talking to somebody really hush-hush and very suspicious-looking, and I had no idea what he was doing, but it did not look on the up-and-up. And the next morning, we come in to find out that Adam Bennett, David Lohner, and three agents had left CAA in the middle of the night with all their files to go over to Endeavor. And one of those agents was actually David Lahner, who stayed at Endeavor for a while and then took off for William Morris, and who probably will, along with Steve Rabineau, who also left Endeavor for William Morris, probably not stick around after the merger for very long. And actually, Nikki Fink reported on her blog, Deadline Hollywood, that both were out looking for other homes, and that UTA is the most likely place they'd land. Now, this is a little inside baseball, but David Lahner and Steve Rabineau are both motion picture literary agents, which means they represent writers and directors. And David Lahner, I believe, represents J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Or at least he did, maybe at some point. We'll have to check that.
Yeah, I don't have the latest on who they represent, but they're very well-known and well-respected motion picture literary agents, and they did not like being at Endeavor, so they're probably not going to like being put back into that mix.
Well, then why would they go to UTA, which is famous for being one of the worst places in town to work?
I have no idea. My question is why is Endeavor and William Morris merging in the first place?
Well, isn't that interesting? Because as far as I always knew, like, William Morris made the bulk of their money in real estate, not on their clients. So that might be why William Morris is hurting from money right now.
Well, certainly Endeavor is the real cool kid in town, the young upstart with all the real cool, hip clients. And William Morris is the, I don't know what you would refer to it as, like the gray-haired veteran that's been around for decades and has a great music department, which Endeavor does not have. But I don't understand why Endeavor would feel they need WMA unless they want to get involved in the music business.
Well, don't forget that WMA does really well in TV packaging, or at least they did for a long time, and are probably still bringing in a lot of money from that.
I remember when we worked there that the big rumor was that Norm Brokaw's, who was an agent for Bill Cosby at the time, was that essentially the Cosby Show, the residuals from the Cosby Show in the 80s kept William Morris alive in the 90s. And I'm sure that's overstated and not exactly
true. But it's probably close to true, though. I bet it is.
I'm sure they made a pretty penny off of it. That's for sure.
But also, Sam Haskell made them a lot of money in reality. And so the fact that he was kicked out was a huge deal. He's pissed. He's writing a book about it.
Well, I think he already wrote
that.
Read about
this?
Yes. Yeah, I did read about it, but I just know.
No, I think it's coming out. I mean, I think he's written it, but I don't think it's been published yet.
Right. I think it says a lot about Jim Wyatt, who is the head of William Morris, who was originally over at ICM. I don't know. It's all very incestuous. This whole agency thing is very incestuous. And let's face it, the big news is that these two big agencies are getting together, probably in an attempt to take on
CAA?
Creative Artists Agency. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they're really doing it to take on ICM, but certainly in an attempt to take over CAA, which has dominated the agency world for so long.
I don't know. I'm not particularly impressed with CAA. Never have been. I don't like their attitude.
Well, you know, they get to have that attitude given their success. I'm sure
But the thing about CAA is that it benefits you if you're like Brad Pitt, because then really what they are is basically they just like they read scripts and tell you, you know, what the one is that will make you the most money, and they'll get you the top directors and will, you know, negotiate a sweet deal for you along with your, you know, high-priced lawyer. But if you're like a mid-level person, then CAA basically ignores you. So like the last place you want to be is at a CAA if you're not Brad Pitt. So on the plus side, yeah, they have all the A-listers. But on the minus side, those A-listers, you know,
take up all the time,
but they also like they grow up, they grow old, they die. I mean, I can't be an A-lister for forever. I mean, at some point, you know, is Zac Efron at CAA? Actually, I think he is. But
I think he just got there.
Yeah, I think he had probably been at, you know, like Paradigm or like one of the smaller ones before, which, you know, unfortunately, and like Tobey Maguire is a perfect example. He was at, was it Gersh with Leslie Siebert? And then he got Spider-Man. He totally just dumped her to go to CAA. And has he had a career since Spider-Man? No.
I know. He was always a really weird guy anyway. I mean,
well, yeah.
I've interviewed him a few times and it's just been like pulling healthy teeth.
Yeah. You know, one of the reasons why they might be merging is because of this industry has lost so much money with the writer's strike, and then because of the potential actor's strike, everything kind of shut down just in case.
Or they made really bad movies.
Oh, they made bad movies.
And television shows.
Yeah, well, we can get to that in a second. But first of all, I want to talk about the SAG agreement, which is a huge deal with the AMPTP, American something producers.
Motion Picture and Television. It's the American Motion Picture and Television Producers
right.
Guild.
Okay, them.
Or the studios.
The studios, yeah. Well, producers, I think, are also included in there, no? Yeah.
Yes, that is correct.
I mean, they have not come to an agreement per se, but they've agreed to vote on certain issues. But the fact that they've even agreed that there will be these issues to talk about is like a big deal, because it's been agreed that they're going to have a 3.5 increase, which is totally unfair because, you know,
a 3.5% raise
in salary.
In salary for whether it's television or movies,
everybody,
anything
that is covered by SAG, which is television, movies. Right now, it's TV and movies and advertising. Advertising's a whole other sector.
Well, you know, most people aren't making Brad Pitt kind of money or George Clooney kind of money. So a 3.5 raise to somebody who stars in a commercial, well, actually, this has nothing to do with commercials. The commercial agreement is completely separate. But somebody who's a walk-on or might work.
Yeah, this is a big deal for them.
15 weeks out of the year is, you know, that's actually meaningful to them.
But what's also a big deal is that it's been understood that they're going to have jurisdiction over the internet now, which would...
No, this is the actors having
the
jurisdiction
actors do.
Over
yeah,
the
SAG does. SAG does. Can't ever say actors, because actors could be covered under AFTRA as well, which is American Federation of Television and Radio Writers, which covers anything that's taped. And that... which means they cover soap operas. They cover certain TV shows. A lot of like ABC Family TV shows are taped, and their actors are covered under AFTRA, which means that they don't have to be SAG. And of course, SAG is really the one that you want to be a part of. It's the bigger one. It's the more important one, arguably.
Well, these two had a joint negotiating agreement up until last year, and there was a very public and very big brouhaha about how AFTRA broke up with SAG and said, effectively, screw you, we're going to go negotiate with the AMPTP on our own and get our own
deal.
They
did.
You guys
which
can
they
just,
did.
Which they did.
And the head of AFTRA, who was a woman whose name I can't remember right now, was fighting with Alan Rosenberg, who is the head of SAG. And he is a well-known, is he an actor or is he a director? I guess he must be an actor.
He is an actor who was married to Marge Helfenberger.
Well, that's the whole thing that I find so particularly interesting is that throughout this entire negotiation process, Alan Rosenberg has been such a jerk that he has caused problems not just between SAG and AFTRA, which you don't really want to cause problems between those two unions, but he's causing problems in between SAG because he is being so stubborn about getting, you know, everything for the SAG members, which in theory is a good thing, in reality is like making him look psychotic. I mean, he's so stubborn, he's so tunnel visioned that, you know, even his wife left him. He's clearly that much of a jerk.
I don't even know what to say to that. I have no idea. I just remember hearing him in a debate on The Business, the NPR show The Business, on KCRW, and he just was such a jerk, and he would not shut up.
But anyway, my point being is that SAG has got has or will have jurisdiction over the internet, which I don't think the writers got, I think they got it, but they didn't get the residuals that they're going to be getting are really small. I haven't read anything that says exactly how much the actors are going to be getting, but I do know that it's been agreed that they're going to have – that SAG has jurisdiction over streaming on the internet. So that is any TV show or movie that is on the internet, any derivative of that. So all of those office little – the clips.
Webisodes.
And the webisodes that they do for that. Anything that's made for the internet and that's high budget – or low budget, if in the low budget one there is at least one SAG person in it. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Yes, I would agree. I know that a lot of people, they didn't get anything on DVD, did they? Because I know the writers didn't.
I don't know. That's always been a, I'm almost positive they get residuals from it. I don't know how you could possibly not. It seems so unfair. Not that the AMPTP is known for being fair, but yeah, I know that the what they're getting for the internet is supposed to be more than what they're getting for DVDs. But at least they have jurisdiction. That's big for them. And they the agreement is only for 2 years, whereas the AMPTP wanted it for three.
Well, I don't get why SAG wants it only for 2 years. I mean, quite honestly, to have to go through this again in another 2 years, that's absurd.
No, no, because I think it's because they knew because of the economy that they had to come to an agreement sooner or later because it's been going on too long. That they just wanted this to end, but they wanted the option to revisit this sooner rather than later. I think that's why it's 2 years. Plus, it's taken them an entire year. They started negotiating 1 year ago, and they really have not gotten anywhere closer now than they were a year ago. So they've already missed that 3.5 wage increase. It's not retroactive. So they've just basically they've wasted that away, which I think I read somewhere is like $65 billion or something, like really obscene. So they've already lost that much money. And it's not if the actors are losing that much money, then the agents are and the managers are and the lawyers are. And, you know, it trickles down.
That's right. Which may explain why William Morris and Endeavor may want to.
Merge.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Well, certainly, because of all of these prolonged negotiations with the writers and the directors and the actors, the studios were not necessarily making movies the way they have been in years past. So over the last year, I would say, you know, they banked a bunch of movies before the potential SAG strike of June in 2008. And
which are all probably awful, by the way.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because in the Hollywood Reporter's Risky Business blog this week, Steven Zaitchik, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, had an article called Flush Times for Theatrical Movies, Don't Tell A.O. Scott. And for those of you who don't know, who don't know who A.O. Scott is, he is the chief film critic or co-chief film critic, along with Manola Dargis, of the New York Times. And effectively, to summarize, what this article was about was how movies that are being reviewed positively, that are critical hits, are financial duds. So outside of Coraline, Duplicity, Adventureland,
State of Play,
which got mixed reviews, the average RottenTomatoes.com score for the top 10 earners so far this year is a dismal 42%, which I'm sure there's arguments could be made about the Rotten Tomato meter, but
I find the Rotten Tomato meter to be pretty good. I mean, I usually agree with.
Well, the post here points out that Sunshine Cleaning is at the moment faring the best of the specialty lot. It's made $1.5 million. It was picked up for $1.5 million at I believe Sundance, and it's earned six times that.
Yeah, but there was a caveat to that in the article.
Well, the Rotten Tomato meter for that was, yeah, it's 70% Rotten Tomato right. score. It's a somewhat less strongly reviewed than some of its specialty peers. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's what I find this whole thing really, really fascinating, because looking at this list of movies and thinking about the movies that have been, you know, the top earners so far this summer, I mean, like Fast and Furious, I mean, I have to admit, I thought about going to go see that.
I did see it.
Was it good?
It was fun. It was what it was. Certainly, it was directed really well. Justin Lin directed it. I think Better Luck Tomorrow was one of his films, and he's a very good director. So he had a lot of style and a lot of, you know, it was good. It was it wasn't great, but I wasn't sorry I saw it. But
you know, another writer who addresses this is Mark Harris in Entertainment Weekly.
I was just going to say that, because the way the Risky Business blog kind of ends their post, they kind of say, one exec we talked to explained the recent trend by saying that people in these recessionary times want escapism more than ever. Well, Mark Harris, who writes the Final Cut, I guess it's the Final Cut column over at Entertainment Weekly, had a whole diatribe on checking your brain at the door. And he feels that in the down economy, entertainment has been dumbed down.
Yeah. And he also says that he doesn't think that people really want that kind of escapism. But of course, the box office tells us otherwise. But then look at TV. I mean, some of the best TV out there is, you know, I mean, Grey's Anatomy, I know that most guys don't watch it, but it's actually a really well-written show. But you take that, and Grey's Anatomy does really, really well. You take that and some of these ridiculous shows that have just been renewed, like, you know, Extreme Makeover, Wife Swap, Super Nanny, America's Funniest Home Videos, which to me are just, that's checking your brain at the door.
Although,
but they
you
do
know
really
what?
Well.
Yeah, you know what? Sometimes those things make for great television. And if you look at what happened with Susan Boyle on Britain's Got Talent.
Which I love, by the way, that brings tears to my eyes.
I mean, that was just an amazing television moment. Now, mind you, there's some speculation and some rumors or conspiracy theories about whether that whole thing was set up, that Simon Cowell and everybody on that jury, all three people on that jury, knew that this about this woman and had set her up to come out there looking the way she did to be this plain Jane woman and come out and wow the crowd.
I don't believe that for a second.
Well,
who thinks that hard?
People who make television think that hard. I don't know whether it's true or not. I'm not saying whether it's true or not. I found Mark Harris's article, which we'll link to in the show notes, incredibly interesting and very funny. I mean, there, he says, so a longstanding Hollywood agenda, a desire to shun challenging material in favor of easily replicable,
easy to replicate
product is disguised offensively as capitulation to popular demand.
I think there's truth to that. I think people are, you know, they do want that. I don't want that. I don't think you want that. Clearly Mark Harris doesn't want that. But there are people out there who do. I mean, there was a reason why Fast and Furious did so well. There's a reason why you saw
it.
Right,
he goes on to talk about how if Roseanne, the television show with, I don't know what her name is, but back then it was Roseanne Barr, if it were pitched today to networks, it would never, never fly.
See, I disagree with that. I think it would. I think it definitely would.
Look, Two and a Half Men is one of the biggest shows on television, so what do I know?
But that's a funny show.
Well, certainly on the motion picture side, specialty films are not doing so well, which might be why Fox is closing. Fox Atomic, which
started it, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, I think he I don't know whether he started it or he oversaw it, but it was certainly a pet project of his. It was a division... that was a production label. Actually, I'm sorry, I'm mistaken. It was started. Michael Fleming says here that it was started by Peter Rice in 2007 to generate
Fleming of Variety.
Yes, I'm sorry, Michael Fleming of Variety. Sorry, Peter Rice in 2007 to generate comedy and genre films. Its marketing arm was absorbed by Fox Searchlight in January of 2008.
Ooh, that was yes. That was the beginning of their demise.
Labelhead Debbie Liebling will return as an executive to 20th Century Fox, where she's going to continue to develop comedies and genre picks for Alex Young and Emma Watts, who are the co-presidents. The fate of everybody else, who knows?
Alex Young, of course, being, what's her name, Kate Walsh from Private Practices, soon to be ex-husband.
Okay, fine. Sure. well, with Peter Rice going over to the Fox Network, to head up the Fox Network, the writing was kind of on the wall for
well, here's what's interesting about that. I agree. The writing was on the wall for Fox Atomic, but the writing is also on the wall, but in a good way, for Peter Rice, because at Fox, that's how you get promoted to those top spots, is by having experience in
film. Right, to have
film
well-rounded,
and TV.
To be well-rounded in Rupert Murdoch's eyes, to have experience in film, to have experience in television.
Right.
That was, and also, by the way, you have to get along with Rupert Murdoch. That's kind of one of the caveats.
Well, yeah, yeah. And are any
you know
of his
what?
Sons left?
I actually
don't
think
so, right?
That's a whole podcast unto itself. we'll have to call in a Rupert Murdoch expert
true.
For that.
But, you know, I think on paper, the fact that Fox Atomic, you know, folded is somewhat, I guess, shocking, because, you know, if you were making specialty films and comedy films, you would think that this would do well, especially since Debbie Liebling is responsible for, like, you know, Borat and Dodgeball. But then look at the movies that they made. 28 Weeks Later, okay, but The Hills Have Eyes 2? Therese does?
Hey, they made Miss March.
I don't even know what that is.
I think it was some film that opened earlier this year. You know, teenage comedy type thing.
Look at that. Who was running the show there? I hope it wasn't Peter Rice. I really did. Somebody wasn't, you know? And Jennifer's Body, which is the Diablo Cody one that's starting Megan
Diablo
Fox.
Diablo Cody, of course, being the...
Juno, the writer of Juno.
Academy Award-winning writer of Juno.
Academy Award-winning writer of Juno. She also wrote United States of Terror on Showtime.
That's right. And of course, they also have a Chris Columbus movie coming out, which means they may have...
Does anybody care about Chris Columbus anymore?
I was going to say they may have folded just in time. I think he's a...
And I'm sorry, but Hayden Panettiere, does anybody care about her either?
I really don't know. We'll find out. People will write into us and tell us.
Yes, write into us. Does anybody care about Hayden Panettiere?
Well,
that rhymes.
That's not the only changes at Fox. They're also shuffling up some of their film schedule, their release schedule. It's pushing the release of Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Ashley Judd's family picture, The Tooth Fairy, from November 13th to January 22nd, which means it must be phenomenal.
No, you're joking. That means it must be
awful. Well, yes.
Awful.
January is usually known as the dumping ground of movies that the studio did not want to put a lot of money into.
And that is because if it was good, they would have left it in November to get the families a Christmas time and Thanksgiving.
And the potential Oscar award season.
The movie starring Ashley Judd and The Rock called The Tooth Fairy, I don't think they were ever in.
Well, this one I'm a little surprised at. They also moved Date Night starring Steve Carell, Tina Fey, Mark Wahlberg, and James Franco to April 9th of next year.
Was it supposed to be in November?
I have no idea. The
April 9th is not a bad place to be, not necessarily.
I am surprised that they did not release that film with as hot as Tina Fey is, with as hot as Steve Carell is, and even James Franco, that I'm surprised they pushed it to next year.
I think really
what they're doing is they don't have enough films that far out, so they're beginning to try and figure out where to put films in their release schedule to fill in all these holes.
Well, this also might have to do, with the strikes and all the horrible movies that were made because of it will be coming out next year. And they probably believe in Date Night. Maybe they believe in The Tooth Fairy. And they need to balance out their horrible movies with ones
Fox
that are
released
decent.
Taken in January and did quite well. The film has made $218.3 million globally. So, you know, certainly releasing... And Paul Blart, Mall Cop,
that's amazing.
Opened the same time. So... maybe they think they're actually moving it to a position or date in which the film could actually perform better.
Fast and Furious came out about the same time as well.
Early April,
April.
And the third film that they're moving is Percy Jackson. Now, they had already... This is a film based on the best-selling young adult novel of the same name. And they're moving that to February 12th of next year. It's a fantasy adventure film. They had already announced that. So it really does look like they may have had a bit of a hole in their release schedule between January and April of next year, where they needed a few films, and maybe they really want to focus on Avatar, James Cameron's 3D epic that is all the buzz.
Going to make epic numbers, I'm sure.
Sure it will. I'll tell you, as much ink as that film is getting without anybody having seen a frame of footage, that film better be good.
Yeah, tell me about it. Or maybe they can fill it with... With one of the Kay Scarpetta movies that Angelina Jolie has teamed with Fox 2000 to produce.
I was just going
to
say, a nice segue.
Thank you very much.
It's not a segue once I point it out, though. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Because I was just going to bring it up.
Well, at this point, that's really all I know, is that she, Angelina Jolie, along with her manager, Geyer Kosinski, is teaming up with Fox 2000 to... They've developed the rights to the books, to Patricia Cornwell's incredibly popular series of about Dr. Kay Scarpetta, who is a medical examiner. And I mean, there's got to be maybe 20 books in this series, and they're going to produce films based on them. And I mean, what I find particularly interesting about this story is that I really don't think that Angelina Jolie is Dr. Kay Scarpetta. Scarpetta would have been somebody more like, you know, ironically, Liam Neeson's wife, the woman who just died.
Natasha Richardson.
Yes, thank you. It's somebody like that. It's somebody like the woman who, for weddings
you know
and a funeral, what?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Andie MacDowell.
No, the good one. Anyway, it's for somebody who's a little bit more mature, somebody who has kind of a handsome sexiness. Not, I mean, come on. Do you believe that Angelina Jolie is a medical examiner?
No.
No. Yeah, no. She's not even old enough to have all the degrees that are required for that.
I don't know. As far as any Angelina Jolie news, I just have to roll my eyes at this point. Good for Fox 2000, because heaven knows I had no idea they were even still in business.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Fox Searchlight, you know, you hear of all the time because of, you know, Slumdog Millionaire, among other things. I mean, they're clearly brilliant. Kristin Scott Thomas, that's the name of the woman, I think.
Oh, yeah, yes, okay.
No, I didn't know Fox 2000 was even still around. I can't think of the last thing that they've done.
I couldn't tell you either.
Who is that? Was that Elizabeth Gabler?
Elizabeth Gabler, correct. She is the head of Fox Search.
Oh, well, she's pretty
Fox
smart, actually. Yeah, where have they been? Carla Hacken, too. I mean, these are like two women running a mini studio. Let's get with it.
I don't know. Maybe we should call them up and ask them, where have you been? What are you doing?
Yeah, let's get them on the show.
Actually, what they probably will tell us is how dumb we are for not knowing what they're up to.
Probably. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. We're going to find out the hard way. Not at Fox, but another piece of talent, another...
Are we going to talk about David Slade in Twilight?
Yes.
Directing Twilight? Yeah, I think that's fascinating. I know that, you know, a lot of people my age don't really care about Twilight, but I saw the movie. First of all, I read the books, the popular books by Stephanie Meyer, and I was rather nonplussed. I thought they were okay. And consequently, when I saw Twilight the movie before I saw it, by the way, I wanted to see it in theaters, but I actually never got around to it, so I saw it on DVD. And I wasn't expecting anything, but I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was really good fun. And I know that Catherine Hardwicke, who was the original director, she gets a lot of flack for that set and making the movie as bad as it was, because it didn't get good reviews. And I, you know, they kind of gave her a good out by making her, you know, what she said, that she's got something else that she's working on. They had creative differences, but I think she was just fired. I think they just didn't want her to do it. Do not quote me on that. I'm telling you right now, I don't know that for sure, but that's what I've heard. And they're bringing in Chris Weitz to do the second one.
Right now, for the third one, which the second one is actually being filmed right now up in Canada. And the third one, which is going to be titled Eclipse, is going to be handled by Helmer David Slade.
And he, what did he do? I mean, he's done Hard Candy, 30 Days of Night. This is dark.
Yeah, very well-styled, well-made films.
So I'm fascinated to see how that's going to go.
I think it's a good hire.
I'm fascinated to see what Chris Weitz will do with it. I mean, he's known for comedy.
Yeah, I think that David Slade is a good hire for that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Really fascinating. In fact, I think Catherine Hardwicke was a good hire.
I agree. I think that maybe the material may have been a little bit, hard to live up to.
But you know what? You have to give her credit for casting this film, because it was really well cast. I mean, you've got in Edward and Bella, you've got, you know, they're perfect. Kristen Stewart and Rob Pattinson, they're perfect.
I can't look at that Pattinson guy. I don't know. It's
I get it. Yeah,
I'm
totally get it.
Also not a woman, so I just think he looks very
yummy.
Odd.
That's He's what's so appealing. Brooding.
Well, yeah, you know, like certainly it. All Hollywood and their films have been doing quite well, as we mentioned, Taken and Paul Blart Mall Cop, and Monsters vs. Alien has made, I think, $175 million. And because of that, when Congress was going to be handing out money for the, I don't know, what do you call this
thing? Stimulus package?
The stimulus package, yeah. Thank you. When they were going to be handing out money, there was $246 million reserved to help Hollywood. And at the very last minute, some Republican senators came in and wiped it out and took it off the books, took it out of the bill. And that really, really upset a lot of the Hollywood studio bigwigs. And so because of that, the chairman of the Motion Picture Association of America, the MPAA, the organization that rates our movies here in the United States, they pretty much came down hard on Dan Glickman, who is now the head of the MPAA and is in Washington as Hollywood's lobbyist.
Well, of course, he took over for Jack Valenti.
Yes, Jack Valenti literally passed away. Yes, the late Jack Valenti recently passed away, I think at the age of like 84.
Yeah, he's been head of the MPAA for a long time.
Decades. I think he started there in the 60s at some point. I'm sure I'm wrong on that. We'll be notified by our listeners. In either case, they came down quite hard on Glickman. They were really upset. The studio heads were really upset with him for not getting that kind of aid in the economic stimulus package. And because of that, they only gave him an 18-month contract renewal, which...
Ouch.
Yes, and that's kind of... Pamela McClintock, a journalist over at Variety, had a whole story on this a couple of weeks back, just before Show West, because the MPAA usually releases this big report about how much films cost to make, how much films cost to market every year, and they update the numbers every year, so they'll do it for the previous year. So they'll talk about things like the box office for 2008, the marketing budget, the average marketing budget for 2008 for a film. And now that report it's looking like the trades, two pages thin. It was a big deal on Tuesday of this past week when a bunch of celebrities and studio heads made their way to Hollywood to mingle.
A bunch of celebrities? I think it was just Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, wasn't it?
Yeah, probably. Well, you know, he's kind of big. You can kind of say he makes up for
it. Well, I guess so. Brad Grey was there. He's sort of a celebrity.
Well, yeah. It's
head of Paramount.
It says here in Variety, showbiz heavyweights stormed Capitol Hill to convince lawmakers that, contrary to popular misperception, the entertainment industry is central to the nation's economy and even its recovery, which was...
Well, I think that's true, though.
That was even a big thing in Dan Glickman's State of the Industry speech at Show West, which every word was chosen incredibly carefully to make this point. Other people who showed up in Washington this past week were Jim Giannopoulos from Fox Filmed Entertainment.
Fox.
As you mentioned, Brad Grey, the Paramount Pictures, I guess chairman or president. He's the head of Paramount. Michael Linton from Sony Pictures Entertainment and Jeff Blake.
He's been around at Universal.
Ron Meyer. Ron Meyer.
No, sorry. Jeff Blake's been around at Sony. Yeah, Ron Meyer's the Universal. Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah. Rick Finkelstein from Walt Disney Studios and Chairman Dick Cook of Walt Disney Studios. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. Rick Finkelstein is with Universal and Dick Cook is
It's hard to keep
Walt
them
Disney.
All straight. They move around a lot.
I need baseball cards
for
these
do
people.
That. That'd be fun.
their new product. Barry Meyer at Warner Brothers was also there. The meeting took place in the National Portrait Gallery and really it's the second annual one or it's a biannual one. I don't know. It's a way to tout out the figures in front of lawmakers as to what Hollywood is contributing economically to the United States.
I think that aren't we one of the United States' biggest exports? I say we, like I'm really this big part of the entertainment business, but isn't it?
Sure. I believe so.
I believe it is, yeah.
The American film and television industry is a national community of diverse, talented, hard-driving, and creative people who are driving this country's economy forward, said Glickman. All we ask for is policies that value creative jobs in creative industries. They actually went into a whole thing about tax incentives and a state-by-state rundown of the wages produced by the entertainment industry. And, of course, California, New York, were dominant in that, and Texas, Florida, Georgia, and Illinois each posted between $1 billion and $2 billion in wages from the business. Well, I can tell you that the senators probably took one look at all of the money writers were making to rewrite films for Tom Cruise and decided that they weren't going to give the industry $246 million. Earlier this week, Variety posted a story.
Yeah, go back to the Tom Cruise thing.
Yeah, well, Michael Fleming in Variety did a whole story on writers making a ton of money to tailor projects specifically for Tom Cruise, some of which...
Yeah, like $250,000 or something.
Per week. Per week, yeah.
That's insane.
A lot of these films now he's not even starring in. The front runners for his next film, according to Fleming, are DreamWorks' Motorcade, which is going to be directed by Len Wiseman, or The Tourist with Charlize Theron. That would be my front runner to be helmed.
Yeah, I don't see Tom Cruise doing any kind of movie with Len Wiseman, the guy best known for Underworld. And he just, what did he just take some, he just ruined some major movie. If I was a fanboy geek, I would know exactly what it was. But
isn't he best known as Mr. Kate?
He's Mr. Kate's...
I can't remember her last name.
Beckinsale. Mr. Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah. Which is not true. So, Mr. Wiseman.
He's married to her. He's very handsome. I'll give him that.
And she's very handsome in a...
Yeah, they make a great couple.
...womanly way.
Die Hard. He just messed up the fourth Die Hard
movie. I thought that was better than the third one.
That wouldn't have been hard, though. Go on.
Well, he's also taking a close look at Fox action comedy Wichita with Cameron Diaz. That would James Mangold is actually slated to direct that.
Oh, see, I'd bet on that one. That looks funny.
I would bet on that. I'm ready to go see that right now.
Yeah, me too. Let's go.
And, of course, then there's The Mattery Circle, the name of a film that I almost didn't say because I probably butchered the name, which potentially matches Cruise with Denzel Washington and David Cronenberg. That I would actually pay to make. I would love to see that film.
Yeah. That's an Academy Award winner right there.
Well, it is David Cronenberg, so.
That's what I mean.
So it could go either way.
Well, if people can keep their clothes on long enough to be nominated.
Well, anyway, this is a... all these screenwriters are being hired. Paul Attanasio was mentioned. Richard Curtis was mentioned. Scott Frank was mentioned. They're being hired for $250,000 a week. And they're taking notes from Cruise himself at times to rewrite these films. To his taste. He's even working with Billy Ray,
who's working on
Motorcade.
Shattered Glass, yeah, he's
and
great.
Christopher McQuarrie, who's working on The Tourist. So we'll see what happens, but I'm sure that the senators took one look at news stories like that and went, you don't need $246 million because it's just going to go to pay five writers in Hollywood to rewrite scripts for Tom Cruise.
Well, that's actually a very good point, but I also think that we should have that there should be tax cuts, just like the tax cuts that exist in Canada, which is why there's so much filming that's done.
You mean
there.
Tax incentives?
We need to have them here.
You mean tax incentives? So
that's what I mean. Yeah, tax incentives. That's what we need. We need to have them here because we need to bring the work back to Los Angeles and back to New York. It's way too expensive to film here.
I don't disagree, especially with the unions.
Yeah.
So, not that I'm against unions, but because union shoots are expensive to produce, and everybody knows that. One person who does not want to star in a film is Arnold Schwarzenegger. Of course, he's busy running the state of California here in the United States. But apparently, he's been working with Mick G on the latest Terminator Salvation, and he will be appearing in the film, but only a digital version of him. They took a body cast of him when he did the original film back in 1984, and somehow McG has been able to use that and pieces of, I don't know, digital effects and movie magic to put Schwarzenegger in the film without actually having to do anything.
Yeah, but do you know how many people will go see that movie just based on that? I think that's amazing. Well, and also, I mean, he won't be the governor anymore by the time that movie comes out. But
no, that movie's coming out this week. This year.
Oh, it's in that movie? Oh, I thought it was for a future one. But see, that's good for him. Then, he's making money off that, so he doesn't even have to act. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Well, he might be donating his payment to charity. Who knows?
Well, let's hope so. Maybe the education or other things that he hasn't, really paid a lot of attention to.
Somebody who does want to do movies is Robert Rodriguez. And speaking of Schwarzenegger films, he's going to be trying to revive the Predator franchise. So
yeah, it's a great idea. But it takes us right back to what we were talking about before, you know, the replicableness of, you know, that people just want to see the same thing over and over again. Fast and Furious, I mean, Predator. A lot of guys that I know like think Predator is like a classic.
You know, I have a confession to make.
It is a classic.
I've never actually seen a Predator movie all the way through.
Oh my, they're good. The first Predator is an awesome movie. It really is.
So
why go to the movies and see it again? I don't understand.
I have no idea. I just know that for Fox, Rodriguez has, according to Variety, scripted Predators, a film that will bring back the dreadlock-sporting alien hunter who originated in the 1987 Arnold Schwarzenegger hit Predator.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. There are a lot of kind of well-known filmmakers who are doing kind of odd, making odd choices, I think. Like Pedro, you know, whose last name I always butcher.
Pedro Almodovar. Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little later. Another person making an odd choice is Francis Ford Coppola, who passed up appearing in the official Cannes selection to appear in the director's Fortnite, or as they say.
Yeah, why would you do that? Sorry.
I don't know, but earlier in the week, Hollywood Reporter, Variety, one of those newspapers said that, actually it was the Hollywood Reporter had a posting that said, Coppola's thinking outside the Cannes, and Cannes was spelled C-A-N-N-E-S. Of course, Cannes is an international film festival. It's been going for now 62 years. It's a big, probably the biggest film festival in the world.
So that headline is what's known as a pun.
Yeah, I guess. I just know that Cannes did unveil their lineup this year, and it was relatively short on American directors, which a lot of people, it is a world festival, so it being short on American directors, the only reason that's a headline is because people really associate the American films with bringing the star wattage to the Croisette in Cannes.
Well, but who says that? Because, you know, the UK and France, I mean, they've got their mega stars too that we've just never heard of.
I completely concur. Quentin Tarantino's film, Inglourious Basterds, which is a World War II film movie, will be there.
Starring Brad Pitt.
Yes, and so there you go. There's your star wattage. You got Brad Pitt.
There's your star wattage.
Eli Roth, Mike Myers, Ang Lee's Woodstock will be there. Comedic take on the legendary concert with Liev Schreiber, Jeffrey Dean, Dean Morgan, and Emile Hirsch. Of course, Up, the Pixar film, it will be the first 3D film to ever play at the festival, and in fact is opening the festival.
Who cares?
It's a big deal.
I don't think that's a big deal. But tell me about why is it a big deal that Coppola didn't want to be in competition? He wanted to be in the director's Fortnite.
Well,
and what is the director's Fortnite?
Okay, well, let's just finish up what's going on here with official selection, and then we'll head down the Croisette to the director's Fortnite. Which is a sidebar, as they say, to the festival itself. Pedro Almodovar, as you mentioned, he is bringing Broken Embraces, a genre blender starring his muse, Penelope Cruz, and Michael Haneke, who is an Austrian director whose last film, Cachet, won a bunch of awards at Cannes. He's a Cannes regular. A lot of these filmmakers are Cannes regulars. So Haneke, Tarantino, Almodovar, they're all Cannes regulars at this point.
Well, that seems sort of unfair, doesn't it?
No, it's just it's kind of what they do every year. Ken Loach's latest film, of course, he won the Cannes Film Festival a few years back with When the Wind Shakes the Barley, a film that is hard to pronounce. So appearing in competition of note is Lars von Trier's Antichrist, which Willem Dafoe is starring in.
Of course.
Lars von Trier at the Cannes Film Festival is just, he's always fun. He always says some really interesting things. Ang Lee's Taking Woodstock and Glorious Bastards from Quentin Tarantino. Ken Loach's Looking for Eric, South Korea's Thirst by Park Chan-wook, whose name I hope I'm pronouncing properly. The Haneke film, The White Ribbon. Enter the Void by Gaspar Noé. And Jane Campion's first film in a long time, Bright Star, which is, of course, Jane Campion, the Australian filmmaker.
Wow, where's she been?
I have no idea. Maybe
watching
probably
making movies at Fox 2000.
Yeah, maybe. Let's see, what appearing out of competition, and this is where Coppola's film, which is called Tetro and stars Vincent Gallo, was rumored to, and I guess he confirmed, they offered him, Terry Frimo, the head of the festival, offered him an out-of-competition slot, which he turned down, Francis Coppola turned down.
Why would you do that?
Well, you know, Vincent Gallo is, I don't know. I don't know why he would do that. Vincent Gallo has a checkered past with the Cannes Film Festival. He did a film called Brown Bunny a couple of years back that
Chloe Sevigny gave him a blowjob?
Yeah, it was just an awful film. Appearing there this year, out of competition, is The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus by Terry Gilliam.
Also known as Heath Ledger's final film.
Yes, and Agora by Alejandro Amenábar, and The Army of Crime from France by Robert... I'm not even going to try and pronounce his last name.
Well, do it phonetically so that I know who you're talking about.
Guida Guan.
Oh,
Guida
Guan. Well done. I like that.
No, that was actually, I believe, yeah, well done. If you're looking to butcher it, that's the best way to do it. Midnight screenings probably of interest would be Drag Me to Hell by Sam Raimi, a horror film. Well, before we leave the Palais des Festivals, which is where the Cannes Film Festival holds most, if not all of its events, there's a little sidebar to Cannes called Un Certain Regard, and they have some interesting films there by Warwick Thornton, filmmaker Warwick Thornton, Samson and Delilah. Delilah will be appearing in Un Certain Regard. Usually these are films that are done by lesser-known filmmakers, or they might be first-time filmmakers, and so they put them in Un Certain Regard, is what the sidebar is referred to. And I'm just trying to see if there's anything else of note. Lee Daniels' Precious, which won the Sundance Film Festival, will be showing there. And that's pretty much it for films that people might have heard about. Down the Croisette, many years back, the director's fortnight started, or the Quinzaine des Réalisateurs, which is the 2 weeks of filmmaking. That's, or filmmakers. Réalisateur being the... I probably should not have tried French on the first podcast. Probably should have waited until at least the second one. Needless to say, it's 2 weeks of films that are selected by its own selection committee. It's its own festival going on at the same time. And Cannes now works with them in some form by providing suggestions for programming. And likewise, it goes back and forth. But Coppola turned Cannes down for Tetro, and instead will be opening his film at the director's fortnight. It will actually open the fortnight.
That's a big deal.
Correct. Okay. Well, it's a big deal that he did not want to appear in, out of competition. Also in the director's fortnight are a couple of Sundance films. I Love You, Philip Morris, which still does not have a distributor stateside after appearing in Sundance. That's the
Glenn. Oh, but it has interesting people in it.
Yes, it's a gay romantic comedy directed by
with Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey and Ewan McGregor.
Right.
And I hear it's just miscast, so I have not seen it. Hump Day, I have not seen, and I really did want to see that at Sundance. It's Lynn Shelton's low-budget comedy.
Well, instead of reading them, why don't you just post them to the...
Yeah,
to
the... we'll just post them, or we'll post a link to the story. Okay, so... That kind of wraps up all of our film news.
Well, let's talk about my favorite guy, Pedro, whose last name I can't pronounce, that he's going to take his movie, Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, and make it into a TV show, right?
Yeah, this I'm not understanding. This is a film that was made in 1992, if I'm not mistaken. It was a Spanish language film. It starred Antonio Banderas. It's how Antonio Banderas came to be... known in the United States.
So he became Antonio Banderas.
Yes. And it also starred Carmen Mora. It was inspired by 1950s Hollywood comedies. And of course, it always features Almodóvar is known for this rapid fire type of dialogue and fast paced action. It's kind of these quirky little comedies he's known for. And it follows this woman, this voice actress, over a 2-day period where she's been kind of dumped by her boyfriend. and she gets into like one situation after another while trying to figure out where he is and trying to track him down. And actually, it wasn't made in 1992. It was made in 1988.
Wow.
So it's really over 20 years old. And now Pedro Almodovar will be working with, I believe, Fox TV Studios. Yes. To adapt it for American television.
So that would be Peter Rice, correct?
I suppose, yeah. Good taste.
To make it, is it going to be a reality show or is it going to be scripted?
Scripted.
Okay, well, now I sort of get it a little bit more. Although, actually, if you made it a reality show, that would have been kind of funny. I could have been in it.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, why call it, I just don't know why you would need to.
It's sort of weirdly sexist.
The Hollywood Reporter says the women's series will be a suburban drama about a group of women who have known each other for a long time, perhaps from college, who are in the middle of their lives and looking at the second half of their lives, said the producer.
So it's essentially Desperate Housewives, but a little more serious.
I don't know why they're, you know, just call it something else. Say that Pedro Almodovar is involved, but why say that he's bringing women on the verge of a nervous breakdown and translating it to American television? It seems fairly.
I think that Americans find that, just the title, to be somewhat provocative.
Yeah, well, somebody who won't be starring in American television is former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. I almost messed up that name.
I never get tired of talking about Blago. Yeah, he wanted to be on the TV show I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, that was being filmed in Costa Rica. But he's out on bail. What word am I looking for? The judge won't let him do it.
His legal problems, I think.
Yeah, his legal problems. As part of his legal problems, he can't leave the United States. Of course, Costa Rica is not in the United States, so that poses a problem. And, you know, good for that judge who was like, no.
Well, I found the story on the Chicago Sun-Times blog, and I just thought it was hilarious, specifically because of what he says. What's really appealing about this opportunity is it's a chance to do something that's really fun and entertaining, compared to some of the other things I get to deal with, which frankly suck. That's a quote from a former Illinois governor.
But should any of that surprise us at this point?
Probably not. He says, I had the chance to meet the celebrities today, and they're going to be great on this show.
I don't even know what other celebrities are on it. Do you?
Yes, The Hills stars Heidi Montag and Spencer Pratt.
Oh, no.
Janice Dickinson, a reality star.
See, these are all people who will not go away.
Former American Idol competitor Sanjaya Malakar.
No, see?
Actor Stephen Baldwin, who I think at this point is only an actor for appearing in reality television
shows.
Yeah,
I think you're right. I see, again, the replicability comes out again. It's like, everything is repeated. Whether it's Woman on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, whether it's a reality show idea, whether it's reality show people, you just can't get enough of it.
I for one, can. I've had enough.
Yeah, no, I can too, but a lot of people can't.
Well, we only have a couple stories left, one of which is somebody else who is not appearing on television, or at least didn't Thursday and Friday, is Jay Leno.
Oh, Jay Leno.
Yes.
Yeah, NBC must be freaking out right about now. This was the only time that he has made an unscheduled, he's had an unscheduled absence, meaning that, you know, he wasn't already going on vacation or what have you. And he was taken to the hospital for dehydration and exhaustion, or, you know, those kind of quasi illnesses that celebrities always manage to get, because everybody's always dehydrated and everybody is always exhausted, so you're never lying. And since NBC was planning on having him on every night at 10 o'clock starting, I guess, in September, you know, they were kind of banking on him. And if there's something wrong with his health, they're sort of screwed.
Yes, in a major, major way. I'm sure.
Because they don't have any scripted dramas to put in there.
Although they could always put Law and Order in.
NBC is not Law and Order. Are they?
I think
so. Oh, you're right. They are. It's the CSI, CBS, the CSI. Yeah, let's put in more Law and Orders.
Well, needless to say, he was out of the hospital the next day after spending one night in the hospital. Nobody said what it was for other than what you've just said. They didn't have a diagnosis or make a diagnosis public. But his spokesperson said that the popular TV talk show host was telling jokes with the nurses. He was running his jokes past the nurses, so he must have been
I hope he's okay.
A sure sign.
I like him. I mean, I don't watch him, but you know, he seems like a nice guy.
Well, also appearing on television, or at least appearing on television next season, ABC has...
All the scripted that's coming back, Lost. I mean, they're obvious ones. Lost and Desperate Housewives and, I guess Brothers and Sisters and Private Practice are not quite so obvious. Ugly Betty was renewed, but people are really surprised by that. But I don't know why they would be, because they just moved Ugly Betty from Los Angeles to New York last year. For 2 years. So they had a 2-year commitment on their space in New York. It would probably end up costing them more money to shut down production now than it would be to just go through it with another season. So my guess is that Ugly Betty is canceled next season. But for now, it is safe.
Castle is not safe. That's off.
No, these are all in the bubble. Castle, In the Motherhood, The Unusuals, which is too bad because it's a fantastic show, Better Off Ted, and Scrubs. But that's actually not particularly surprising. I'm surprised they picked up Scrubs, frankly.
So was I, actually. Especially,
I mean, Zach Braff doesn't want to be on the show anymore. Why would you bother?
I have no idea. So those are some ABC pickups, things that will not be appearing. Well, actually, they are appearing on television. PBS, if you're looking to watch a bunch of PBS shows, you can now do so online. And so much like Hulu, NBC, and Fox putting many of their shows, and even ABC, putting many of their shows on Hulu, it looks as if PBS is following suit by putting 120 episodes of shows such as American Masterpiece, Nova, and Frontline on its own website and its own video portal. I actually took a look at it just yesterday. It looks pretty good. There's full episodes on it. 130 episodes.
Yeah, but here's
actually
the irony
there. LA Times is reporting.
Who watches PBS?
I do.
I would say arguably people 40 and above. Are those the people that watch TV on their computers? No.
So what you're saying is there's a big disconnect between the lean back culture, which is people 40 and above, as opposed to the lean forward.
Watch TV, which is television being a lean back medium.
Right.
And computers being a lean forward. Yeah, I mean, I admittedly will watch some PBS, but I don't watch it leaning forward on my computer and like really focusing and paying attention. I would watch Lost in that manner, but I would never watch, you know, Masterpiece. Never.
Yes.
And my mother certainly wouldn't. She barely knows how to turn on her computer. So yeah, I think this is a huge misfire. This does not pass the mom test whatsoever.
I bet you it's a huge hit.
I know, probably, because I'm always, usually wrong about stuff like this.
You know what I said about Hulu?
Oh, I knew Hulu would do well.
I said, that is the stupidest thing, that NBC is taking its shows off of iTunes and putting them on some stupid named website named Hulu. Well, I also said Twitter would never be a success in 2006, and boy, was I wrong about that.
Technically, Twitter is not a success. It's not a financial success.
It's not a financial success, but it now has Oprah Winfrey.
Which will definitely take it places. I mean, she got like a million people who started following her as soon as she said hi.
Well, I don't think a million. I think Ashton Kutcher and CNN Breaking News are only the...
Oh, you're right. She got halfway there.
I think she got 256 or 500,000 people within the first week. One of her first tweets, though, Twitter is a micro-blogging site in which users can post 140-character messages that other users can follow, and it can be sent to your phone if need be, or if you'd like, but usually people just visit the website or have some kind of chat client that shows these messages of all the people they're following. So now over 500,000 people are following whatever Oprah has on the top of her mind that she can say in 140 characters or less. And one of her first posts was in all caps. And so Shaquille O'Neal, who is also on Twitter, his handle, if you will, his username is the real Shaq, the_real_Shaq. And
what's Oprah's?
Oprah. There's only one Oprah, and literally.
Why didn't I think to buy that?
I'm sure they would have taken it from you. I'm sure they would have.
They could have bought it from me.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's probably what they're trying to avoid. Anyway, on CNET, they have this little post that says, Oprah gets pwned by Shaq on Twitter. And pwned is just another.
What does that mean?
It just means put down, dissed. Like, I, it's like punched and owned. I pwned you.
Oh, I like that.
Or, if you hack a computer, you pwned a computer, I owned
it. Can we talk about the fact that she totally deserved it? I mean, here's what she tweets, and it's like all in caps, and she has this really weird habit of having a space before her periods. So it says, "Hi, Twitters, space, period, space. Thank you for a warm welcome. Feeling really 21st century, space, period."
And then Shaq responds, at...
And then this really stupid picture of her and her dog. Okay, cool.
Shaq responds, at Oprah, the at symbol, and then Oprah, your caps are on, by the way. Or, your caps are on, BTW. And he spells nothing correctly, no caps at all.
Oh, yeah, you are caps, R for R. I mean, this is how you do it.
Yeah, he is. He's like 22nd century. He doesn't even spell.
Yeah.
That is pretty much the news that we had to discuss. I know this podcast ran long. Again, it was our first episode. We're going to get better. The hope is to have these things down to between 30 and 40 minutes, definitely under an hour. So if you're listening to this and it's more than an hour, it means we're still learning how to edit as well.
Yeah, but yeah, we're glad you stayed this long.
Now, there are ways to contact us and tell us what fools we are or just how much you like us. You can email us news stories that you want us to consider covering or suggestions for news stories to cover. dirt@showbizsandbox is the email address. That's dirt, D-I-R-T, at showbizsandbox. Or you can call us. The number to call will eventually be an 800 number, but for right now, you can leave a voicemail at 847-235-4899. That number again is 847-235-4899. There's a ton of ways to follow us and stay on top of what we're doing and how great we're getting at becoming entertainment news podcasters. We have a Twitter account, which is at twitter.com/showbizsandbox. So it's at showbizsandbox. We have a Facebook group. If you search for us on Facebook, we have a group, not a fan page, a group. We might change that to a fan page someday. And if you want to suggest news stories to us through social bookmarking websites, we are actually checking the Showbiz Sandbox tag at Delicious. So if you use Delicious and you save a URL to Delicious and you tag it with Showbiz Sandbox, all one word, then, of course, we will find it. We also have a group on LinkedIn. So if you're a member of LinkedIn...
You're all over the
place. You know what? Web 2.0. What can I say?
Absolutely.
It's time for Web 3.0. So if you look for us on LinkedIn. And finally, we have a YouTube channel, which has absolutely nothing on it, but we hope to be posting stuff there at some point. Maybe after our third or fourth episode, when we finally figure out what it is we're doing.
YouTube. Does that mean we're going to be like video?
I have no idea what we'll post there.
I hope not. I don't want to start putting makeup on to record this.
Well, of course, all the notes... All of the links to the articles and stories we discuss can be found in our show notes, which can be found on the website www.showbizsandbox.com.
This was fun.
This was fun. I look forward to doing it again next week. Ideally, we are going to be recording on Sunday afternoons and posting on Monday. I'm sure there will be weeks, such as in 2 weeks when I go to Cannes, where we'll have to record on a Monday. But for the most part, we're going to aim for having this as a weekly podcast, recorded every Sunday, posted every Monday.
Sounds good.
So until next time, play nice.
That was clever. I like that. Play nice.
I just came up with it.
Some of the best things come that way.